let me see here. It is, what is it? It's November 13th, 2005.
And I just want to throw this in. The main reason I think it makes sense to do something like this and put it on the website is because I find websites both to be informative but also good ways to kill time when you're at a computer.
Sure.
And you have to be at a computer for hours and hours and hours. Mm-hmm. In whatever context, one may find oneself at a computer for hours and hours and hours.
The disclaimer. But anyway, no. One of the I've been listening to your music for a number of years, and so we have a history with that. But one of the things that I'll tell you, wilderness of our dreams. I'll go directly into what I think is most interesting about that album, and I know we've spoken about it, but I'll sort of put you to the test here. It's The thing that I find interesting about that album is how you will engage a sound or a riff or an idea and almost immediately, if almost schizophrenically, shift away from it.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm posing that to you is because it's incredibly intriguing.
I'm very fond of some albums that, you know, like some Peter Gabriel albums or you know, some albums that, you know, I didn't necessarily get the first couple of times I heard them. And you listen to them more and more, and slowly you begin to really figure out their architecture.
Sure.
And I deliberately wanted to make an album like that, an album that was a little opaque, but that would reveal itself over multiple listings as you get more familiar with the terrain. I wanted to create a really intricate landscape that you would need to get familiar with in order to be accustomed to, but that once you became familiar with it, you would feel like you'd really accomplished something. You discovered this place, this world, you know, and I have had that reaction to some albums. But the thing that I didn't realize is that, you know, you have to really have a strong bond with an artist to begin with to be willing to listen to their album three or four times in a row. This is not something that immediately says to a listener, oh, come back for more. There's a level upon which I'm trying to outsmart the listener. No, that's not right. Actually, that's not right. It's quite the opposite.
Outsmart yourself, maybe.
Outsmarted myself. All right. So one of the things that I've talked to you about is, you know, one thing that I had this theory about was that one of the reasons some albums are really intriguing to hear, really put together albums, is because you're hearing the collision of hundreds of hours worth of work compressed into 40 minutes.
Right.
You know, and you don't realize it, but as you keep listening to it, you keep hearing all these different parts, or you keep hearing all these different instrumentations, these different musicians, and on some level, you know, it's like you're being given, that's my clock, let's let it ring, on some level you're being given this unique experience of a compressed couple of years of somebody's life in 40 minutes. That was part of the thinking process. I guess what I was thinking is I was really scared of music being outdated. Mm. It's just one of the lines on music as a social force.
Right.
I mean, I'm really aware of the fact that it's not that difficult to use the gear, and it's not that difficult to work the equipment. It requires a lot of dedication and time, but I guess I kept imagining that I was trying to compete. I was competing with my concept of what music in 5 years from now will sound like, mm-hmm. and I wanted it to sound like it was 5 years ahead of that. I think that means that at the very least the album has a certain character, mm-hmm. and it's something unique about it. And I think that it will probably be a little bit more palatable if I do some somewhat more conventional things to kind of balance out against it and offset it. And it can be sort of, you know, it'll be one of a collection, and that's always what I had in mind. Lava Lamp was being done sort of at the same time, and there's all this other stuff that's now on the site that I've done before, and as you say, you've been listening to stuff for years, and I've done a lot of other stuff. It just hasn't necessarily translated very well into a recording. But, you know, I mean, a lot also that had to do with it was I was working on it after 9/11, and you know that I worked a few blocks away from there.
Right.
And because I live in New Jersey and because I worked only a few blocks from there, I would take the PATH train in, and so I came out of the PATH train at the World Trade Center on the morning.
Right.
But, you know, that's not entirely relevant to the website. But the point is that, or music. But the point is that I got into this sort of like, maybe even post-stress traumatic thing, where I was just kind of like stuck in this place where I kept working on the album. And I guess I wasn't ready to enter the transition of being done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kept whittling with it. It's like, right. you know, maybe sort of Jack Nicholson in The Shining. But I think at least I got something done, and it's something. It, you know, I mean, I thought I was making a big, glorious pop album, and obviously, that's not what I made. So.
Well, it's I'd say it's your most thematically realized. You know, in terms of one song leading into the next, it's sort of.
It has a mood. It's its own thing. Right. It's just not particularly uplifting.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. That's really where it goes. It is an interesting album to listen to. It's going to interesting places.
A lot of really sincere, incredibly sincere gut went into that thing, and it is all by one person, by design.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that there would be some sort of perverse poetry to making this ridiculously complex thing. And then you find out it's just one person. But, you know, there's a limit to how much intellect should really be in these things. And maybe, like we were just saying, I outsmarted myself. I don't know. But a lot went into it. A lot went into it that I think was from a genuine place.
No, it's a little difficult. I mean, to get the feedback that you need sometimes to know, you know, to feel... okay about it. In fact, that when you're not, I think part of what we're talking about here is doing music for music's sake and hoping that communication with other people who are either affected by it or doing something similar occurs, and that there is an exchange of ideas. But on the other hand, part of this is that it's sort of an experiment in a bubble because there's a limited range of at least contact that you know about that people have had with this project you put a lot of time and effort into. Sure, we're sort of tearing it apart in it to some degree, but I will also say that I think it's very rich. There's a lot there. It's
I hope so.
I think we'll say that it's dark.
Yeah, it's dark, but I think it's honest. I mean, mm-hmm. It's I don't know what the hell it is. It's not what I thought it was going to be when I originally said I'm going to spend the next couple of years making my magnum opus, and I'm going to take harvest some of the best riffs and have one ringer of a song, and and try to explore. This brave new world of technology. I mean, I thought I was going to come out with, the Ten Commandments. But,
okay.
Shit happens. And, you can plan to do one thing, and then your life happens and things happen. And, that's going to affect any endeavor you have, I think.
Sure.
The fact that it did affect the music, and there's a quote of David Burns that I put up on the site or on the CD Baby page where he basically says, I can't really talk about an album that I've done until some time has passed. I can talk about how it got made. And again, I saw that quote and I was like, okay, because I wasn't getting necessarily the feedback that I was hoping for from people to the album, but everybody was like, it's very dark or it's very intense. One friend said it left him with a lasting feeling of sadness, which is not quite the goal. But you know, that feedback, which was so far from what I had hoped for, it was interesting because it you know, I looked at that feedback and I looked back on what was going on while it was made, and I was like, well, you know, shit, you know, I mean, you could practically see from my window where the Twin Towers were, you know,
sure.
And you go to the corner and you can see it. And for a year while I was making the album, you know, there was still three stories of rubble.
Right.
You know, I was coming home from work. I would walk from the office where I was at. I'd walk down the street to get to the train to go uptown to catch the PATH train, as opposed to walking downtown. And you go down to the, to like, you know, West Broadway or Church Street, actually. And, you know, there was, you know, the girders, and still there was stuff rising out of the ground. And I mean, you know, and then suddenly we're, you know, attacking a country, and, you know, nobody would have, you know. I guess in a way, this is my perverse way of trying to pitch the record. It would be kind of a really freakish thing if I put out some music in the middle of all of that, which was about, you know, getting laid and, you know, trucking.
Well, it is kind of interesting. I mean, how often, I mean, since we're just talking about it, and this is an open discussion between two old friends, you know, I mean, as I was telling you earlier, that oftentimes, and I'm sure lots of other people do the exact same thing, when I watch a movie that I've rented that I enjoy, I'll often listen to the director's commentary on it. That to me is almost as enjoyable and relevant and interesting as the movie itself, because to go through with them recollecting the, you know, the birth of this project is amazing. But what struck me on some of the low budget films that I've watched the commentary for is how long it takes from the time that a movie is complete for it to ever be released or for anyone to ever see it in a public theater.
Yeah.
It can be, you know, 3-4 years, and it's 4 years later you have the actors, you know, doing the publicity shows and finally the interviews about a work they completed a long time ago.
Another irony is that, you know, I could have continued working on the thing probably for another 3 or 4 years. And I should definitely mention Pierre Jacquelone, who mastered the disc. And on the album artwork, which probably not many people will see, especially if they're encountering it on the site, I mentioned that he mastered and birthed it because, you know, he was... part of my aesthetic was to do it by myself,
right.
And I did do it by myself. But, you know, after going out into the woods to write Walden, you know, I needed to sort of reacclimate to the world. And having somebody else out there who is at least as dedicated and involved in music and who understood where I had been and what I was trying to do and who could sort of take it from me and sort of wrap it up into a bow was really, really a great thing. And he did a great job with it. For anybody who doesn't know, mastering is related to the making of the album in the same way that something like framing or displaying a painting is related to the painting. Pierre had to work with was completed, mixed, performed, recorded, done. But it was for him to make sure that all the tracks had an even sort of volume. Again, it's a bit like framing something. But apart from that, I did the thing. So,
right. I'll go into. I think since we're talking about some of the, you felt at least, you know, you had a compulsion to finish the disc, and again, from having watched you work on it for so long, it was interesting because. From my point of view, it seemed as if it was finished several times, but of course you went back to it and changed it time and time again. But I'm just gonna bring up this song, and I don't know if it's the title, but it's with the lyrics "Talk to Them."
Church Street.
I think that was an interesting song, and it obviously resonated with my mindset because.
Well, that song is. In terms of. I think of, obviously it's
yeah.
It's about. Wait, talk to me. No, wait. Talk to the
talk
man.
To them. Right, talk
to the man. Sorry. Yeah, that's Church Street. That is the one that's most directly relevant to what I was just saying.
Right.
You know, right after the Trade Center got hit,
mm-hmm.
The city was sort of shut down for a week. Certainly my part of it, everything below 14th Street was inaccessible for a week. And the company that I was working at was well below 14th Street.
Mm-hmm.
So I essentially had a week off.
Right.
And I had a little Martin backpacker guitar. I was living at this point in Jersey City with my girlfriend at the time. I had a room in this apartment, large apartment, and I had a room that was set up for me to do music in. I had some time to myself during that week. We were probably all in the apartment, but it was fairly large, and the woman I was with was an artist in her own right, and I think she was working in her space. And so I had some time, and I was in there with this little Martin backpacker guitar, and I just, probably I had a pre-existing drum pattern, you know, like little scraps that were lying around. And then I started singing, and the original vocal, the part where I'm singing talk,
mm-hmm.
and the voice goes very high and I hit notes that I don't know that I can otherwise hit, I was hitting because of the emotion of that particular moment, and I was singing talk. And, you know, all right, so my theory on this disc was that I was going to use the technology to capture snapshots, and whenever I got the most honest performance, keep it. Now, it's interesting because you were came by that apartment a couple of months later, maybe not even a month later, when that relationship was kind of falling apart, and
right.
I was moving apart, because it turned out that we were about to get a new apartment prior to the events of 9/11, and then 9/11 happened, and you know, the relationship turned into one of us was going to take the apartment, and then I went and got another apartment.
It brought so many people together, but it seems
it
as
knocked
as
some
was,
people apart,
sure.
And we were already a very stressful juncture, and then that happened. You know, there's another song on there, Ball and Chain, which was similarly done. It was in this apartment, which was at this point pretty much empty because we were moving apart.
Yeah.
She had moved most of her stuff, I think, and you came over, or maybe she hadn't moved it yet, but whatever. But you came over, and I had just done, basically, Ball and Chain, which started out as just being the acoustic guitar, bass, and some sort of crazy otherworldly electric stuff. And it could have been done at that point, maybe, but I futzed with it, and I added some additional vocal overdubs, and then I decided to add the drums, which are, you know, that's another thing. You keep saying that, you know, you don't like the electronic drums, but as you know, they're actually played live for the most part. They are electronic sounds, because I went through a period, you know, I didn't listen to a lot of Radiohead, but I knew that was the next big thing, and everybody was crazy about analog stuff. So I got this analog drum module, and I connected it to a drum trigger, and I played the drum parts live. But of course, you don't have that, the ambient sound of a room, or, you know, you don't get that sense of it's being live. So maybe that was a poor choice and a learning decision. But the irony is that most of the drums on there are being played live, even if they're not live, real drums. And it took a long time to play the drums on Ball and Chain, because that was not sequenced at all. That just started out a guy in a room with an acoustic guitar pouring his guts out and bemoaning a disintegrating relationship. And I at the time, I wasn't sure whether the Ball and Chain was the person I was with or music.
Right.
And my fixation on music was perhaps the thing that was keeping me from being in the relationship. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff on there that's very honest, and I learned from that. And on Lava Lamp, I stayed away from synthetic drums for everything but the kick drums. And there's a lot more snare playing. But you can tell from the drumming on Lava Lamp that I can play. And if instead of banging on that snare drum, I had been banging on a drum module, you would have gotten the drum sounds on Wilderness of Our Dreams. And so I guess if you can, though you can't quite relate, it's kind of like Neil Young's Trans period, where he was trying to sing the lyrics through a vocoder, so you didn't get that emotional connection. But if you visualize somebody actually banging away on drum pads to play those drum parts, there's some sequencing, obviously, on Wilderness, but ironically, it's often not where you'd expect it. The drums on Land of the Blind are sequenced, though there's some snare. But the drum part in Commodification Nation, that kick drum, it's not sequenced because the bass part was not sequenced and there was no way to match it up. And that literally took me the better part of a week just with a little Roland drum trigger that I'm picking up and looking at now. It's like a DM5 or something. You actually mount it on an actual kick drum pedal, and it has a backwards beater, and it slams down and hits this little MIDI controller. And it took me the better part of a week to play that part tightly enough so that it worked, and it sounded like a dehumanized techno beat. I've succeeded in completely undermining the fact that so much time went into it, but just for the director's commentary, as you were saying. It's kind of interesting.